kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It's another reviews episode. PartyCast is going to be here later on, but Tim Ekibis is starting off the show. Tim, how are you doing?
Good.
Recording things a little differently today. We're not on Skype. We are on Discord, so the audio quality is a little different than usual, but...
Better? Worse? Who knows? Worse. You be the judge. Worse? Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, we already know. We already know it is worse. Sorry. Yeah, Skype is... A fine product that is always very reliable, and Facebook Messenger is just as that. Oh my God!
Everything is reliable.
Jesus Christ, it's fucking Skype. God damn, give me a break. Yeah. Anyways, yeah, we're here to talk about some games, and
you want to just dive into things?
Oh shit! Was this the top of the show? Sorry, I'm also like trying to work out shit for MAGFest at the same time. I'm like,
you are so scatterbrained right today.
Now. I am extremely scatterbrained, like right now. That's why like we're late getting started recording, and then all the fucking hardware didn't work, and I'm still just trying to like shoot emails and texts, and now everything's fine, and you have my full attention. Whoa, dude! It's Wrestlecast this week.
Yeah, it is. Next episode, we're getting a lot of Tim this week.
Yeah, I mean, that's exciting. The downside is that it's Survivor Series. But
why is that a downside? I'm excited for Survivor Series.
It's the worst of the big pay-per-views of the year. It's only interesting this year because, and it, we'll talk about it plenty on Thursday, but I feel it's really only at all interesting this year because NXT is involved.
Yeah, that's what I'm like, excited about.
Nobody gives a fiddler's fucking fart about brand supremacy.
Fiddler's fucking fart.
Yeah, I don't know, man. WWE's been such a mess lately, but hey, Punk is back. That's the thing we should mention, that Punk is doing the show on Fox.
Yeah,
Sports.
That is exciting.
That's FS1, cool. It should be fun.
WWE backstage.
There.
What did you think when you saw that video?
I wasn't surprised, really, honestly. Like, because I'd heard the rumor that he was, you know, interviewing and meeting for it, and I'm like, yeah, that just seems right. Seems like the right thing. That's how he's going to start getting back involved again.
Do you think he shows up on Saturday or on Sunday in Chicago?
Oh, it's in Chicago?
Yeah.
No.
You don't think he's showing up?
Nope.
No appearance at all?
Nope. I think it's going to be a while. It's going to be an easing in before he actually
makes an appearance.
Steps from. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a while. It was a long time that he even like was associated with wrestling again, and I think it's going to be a long time before he's actually on the proper WWE side, but you know
there's going to be chance on Sunday.
And then everybody is fucking like, oh, Punk sold out. I can't believe he went back. Shut up. Fucking chanting his name for years. Shut up. My God. All right.
I'm thrilled he's back. I'm thrilled. I can't wait to see what he says. We're recording this before his debut episode on Backstage.
Later tonight.
So I'm excited to see what he says and what he does.
Yeah, should be good. Yeah,
he should be good. You know what else should be good? The games that we talk about this week.
They should be good, but I have mixed results.
Oh, boy.
But they should always be good.
Should we dive into them?
Let's dive in.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is called Planescape Torment and Icewind Dale Enhanced Edition, developed and published by Beamdog. It released October 15th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $49.99. Journey deep into Icewind Dale, a harsh and unforgiving territory settled only by the hardest folk. Battle the cunning, ferocious beasts that survive among the snow-shrouded peaks and confront an evil that schemes to wreak destruction upon the world. Then explore the bizarre universe of Planescape, from the dirty streets of Sigil to the mysterious outer plains, even the depths of hell itself. This is a place where the world is mightier than the sword, where thought defies reality, and belief has the power to reshape worlds. Tim, it sounds epic. Tell us about it.
Oh my gosh. Planescape Torment, Icewind Dale. Oh my gosh. What a package. I guess to slightly cut to the chase. Well, I don't. So yeah, these games are old PC games. They, like, Planescape is just about 20. It will be in December. Icewind Dale will be 20 years old next year. So these games were created and designed for the PC back around the turn of the century by Black Isle Studios, the makers of Fallout. Their lineage runs down to Obsidian, who you may have heard of, made The Outer Worlds. And, you know, they were working on something called the BioWare engine back when those were the types of games that BioWare made. And a lot of those games, and these two included, were actually based on Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. So that is the backbone and the rule set used for both of these games. And I bring that up because you can tell. Like, it's not like, oh yeah, it's that running under the hood. I mean, some of it is under the hood. Like, it's automating, you know, die rolls and stuff like that. But it is running by those rules, which is never more apparent than when you start up Icewind Dale and start, like, looking at the character creator, and then your mind just turns into jelly at the kind of options and decisions that lay before you. But anyway, these are, you know, that's what these are. They're PC RPGs. They're designed for the PC. They're meant to be played with a mouse and keyboard. The enhanced editions, I think, originally came out on PC like a couple years ago. We're going to assume here that if you want the optimum experience for playing these games, you know damn well you should be playing them with a mouse and keyboard on PC. That, I think, well, it doesn't go without saying because I just said it, but there you go. So we're talking about a console port here, specifically on the Switch. Yeah, so Planescape Torment, and this is where I recommend people start playing first, not just because I think it is, in fact, the better game, but I think it's easier to get into, because in Icewind Dale, you start the game and you are controlling a six-character fucking party right off the bat. And in Planescape,
they don't ease you in.
No, they do not ease you in. And arguably, they don't really ease you into Torment either. Like, these games are, you know, not the modern RPG where they're going to give you, you know, waypoints on the map. Like, oh, I'm going to follow this quest and it's going to tell me where on the map I need to go to do this. Sometimes it only kind of gives you a vague hint is what you need to know in order to do this. Things are a little more obtuse, both intentionally and just as a matter of the times in which the games came out. But just kind of brace yourself. Like, that is... by no means a bad thing, but there was definitely like a easing in period to the game being like, okay, I need to kind of approach this and think about this and think about what I'm doing in a different way that I'm used to in modern RPGs. And it's a bit more, I think, methodical overall. But yeah, if you start up Planescape Torment, and you start off that game and you only have two characters to control, really, and you don't really have to do like a ton of fine control to your floating skull buddy that joins you right off the bat. Planescape is weird, by the way. It's fucking weird. by design, the game, just like the world and the characters in it are just so out there and fascinating and so cool. Yeah, so for consoles, in both games, you can have direct control over a character, and your party members will kind of follow you. You set up formations in Icewind Dale, and they just kind of like hang out with you in Torment. So you can have direct control over the character when you're just moving about the screen, but you can also, with the push of a button, go to where you have control over a cursor instead. So you're just basically like kind of giving yourself a drag across the screen mouse. It's kind of a bummer on Switch that they don't have touch compatibility.
Really? Nothing?
Yeah, I was poking at it and just it wasn't going. It seems like that would have been a big help to making the controls like a little bit easier to use. I mean, maybe that's something they'll patch in later. Like, again, this came to all the consoles at the same time, so maybe they didn't have the time to do something specialized for the Switch, but might be worth looking into on their end. So, yeah, there's that, and you don't have hotkeys, you know, a keyboard full of hotkeys in front of you. But you can pause the action at any time, and when you pause the game, you can still, you know, click on your characters and make command and input commands to them, direct them where to stand, where to attack, you know, abilities to use, stuff like that. A lot of what I'm saying goes across both games. They are similar, built on the same engine. They just kind of go in different directions. You have, you know, again, inventory management. That's something, it's a little clunky to use with button controls, but it's functional. It's fine. And then you'll just like pick up an item and, you know, you have to click over with the buttons to a different slot, or you pick up an item and you'll hit one of the triggers to move over to like one of your companion's inventory to drop it in there instead. You have, so yeah, it's functional. It's not optimum, but if you want to play, you know, these games on a console or on the go on the Switch, like it seems serviceable for experiencing them if you don't have the means to sit in front of a PC to play. So the games themselves, Planescape, you are this naked tattooed barbarian dude who wakes up in a morgue and is apparently dead and has died a bunch of times, and some people know him already and he doesn't remember them. And your quest in that game in Planescape is to try to recover your memories and figure out what you need to do in the world to escape this cycle of dying over and over and over and over again. And it's just really cool. Like when you are talking to characters, and in both of these games, like the level of, like the writing is very good. It's very detailed because it's trying to hit the vibe of a, you know, a dungeon master explaining to you the details of a world or a room or a character. You know, characters are really well written and have distinct dialogue to them. They just, like, all of that stuff is just massively enriching to the world and the games you're playing. which is helpful considering that they're on, you know, pre-rendered backgrounds. Think like Final Fantasy VII, mm-hmm. like that kind of background. That's what they're on, which is fine. That's the tenor of the day. And I think they look good. You know, you'll mouse over things that you can interact with and they'll highlight on the screen. But, you know, in Planescape, you'll be like talking to somebody and you go through, you know, these dialogue trees. And every now and then, like you when you're talking to a character, you might start to recover a memory of your past, and it'll make a note in your journal, or you'll just pick up a quest and it'll make a note in your journal. And it definitely pays to, because when you go into your journal in Planescape, like you'll find a quest list, which will give you, you know, kind of an idea of what you're supposed to do next on a particular quest. And then there's just journal entries, which is just like this long list of like shit your character remembers and decides to jot down, which is important because there's hints in there. Planescape especially is a very like cerebral, like thinking, more leaning almost to an adventure RPG than an action, or, you know, an action combat based RPG. There's certainly combat in the game, but anyone who has played Planescape apparently will tell you the exact same build to start your character with, which is to jack up your wisdom and intelligence and a little bit of charisma, because that's how you get the most out of the game, because it's a game about talking to characters, and wisdom opens up more, and upping those stats basically opens more dialogue options. And it's just a really cool, fascinating world to explore with a super intriguing, mysterious story. Like Planescape is a game that I've kind of has been on my radar of something to play for years now. Yeah. And it was cool to finally get to play it and be like, oh, okay, this is what everyone's been talking about like all that time. Like, I get it now. And Icewind Dale is a much more combat-centric game. Like I said, you start off in that game and there are preset characters to choose from, but you can also make characters. And when you are making characters, you are doing fucking die rolls, you are picking races, you are picking classes and subclasses, and you are picking an alignment, you know, neutral, true neutral, lawful good, that stuff. And it's just like the first time I started up Icewind Dale, I like started looking through that stuff and was like, no, I can't do this right now. I'm not ready. Like,
I don't have the time for this right now. Like, I need to set aside an afternoon for this.
Kind of really, like, if you're going to get into like Icewind Dale, especially, like, you probably want to do some research as to what all this means, because the game doesn't tell you that. I'm guessing, hell, I guess that the game at the time must have had to have come with like some kind of D&D source book, just so you know what all this stuff was. but it pays. I think, you know, in this day and age, 20 years later, like in both these games, to an extent, to like look at some of, you know, what people have written, because there's game facts guides going back years, you know, there's YouTube videos, just to kind of get a feel for like what you're supposed to do if you've never played one of these PC RPGs before. But yeah, Icewind Dale, you make your crew, and it is much more of a combat-focused game with running your party around and coordinating tactics and fighting monsters and taking on quests and stuff like that. Also, though, you know, I didn't dig into it so much, was they have an expansion pack for Icewind Dale is also included. So you get the total package of this game is actually, you know, it is Planescape Torment, it is Icewind Dale, and is the Icewind Dale expansion, whose name escapes me right now. Oh my god. But there is lots of content here, and with lots of replayability, and I, you know, in playing both of them, I found them to be perfectly functional ways to play the game on the go. There is options to make the font size bigger, which even on the largest setting is still like maybe a hair small, but it was definitely readable playing in portable mode. Much better than some games I've seen trying to play portable mode. So there is that. There is like tons of options in both games for making them harder or easier, or, you know, lots of switches to flip in the background. They did carry over kind of the traditional suite of like a PC game having tons of options for you to fiddle with. That did come over intact. And yeah, it's a good package, I think, overall.
So your official verdict at $50, what do you think?
Oh, $50. No, it's I mean, these are both like lengthy RPGs. I think it is a worthwhile purchase. Again, if you don't have a PC available, or you prefer to try to play the game on the go, I think it's well worth a buy for these. It's like I said, not the ideal, but it's still pretty solid, a pretty solid way to play these games.
Yeah, hopefully they do bring touch support to the Switch. That would be nice to see. I'm not sure if it's there or not, but mouse and keyboard support on Xbox would be good too.
Yeah, did not have that for review, but
yeah,
that would be good.
Awesome. Well, next game to talk about is called Stay Cool Kobayashi-san, a River City Ransom story developed and published by Arc System Works, released November 7th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $13.99. Kunio-kun's infamous rival that all River City fans will recognize, the head of Reiho High School Big Four, Kobayashi, gets his own game. Tim, tell us about this one.
Oh, boy. All right, so this game...
should point out, you are our resident River City Ransom fanboy.
I am the resident River City Ransom fanboy. This is the third River City game I reviewed in like the past 2 months between River City Girls and River City Melee Mac. And now this one, they're just pumping these things out here, apparently. So this one, this follows one of the villains from the series. And again, we are shifting to, well, I guess, this is the Japanese River City universe, not the American River City universe, which was only really followed up on in River City Ransom Underground. Kobayashi-san, one of the villains. So the deal is, and you might recall, like, a month ago when I was talking about River City Melee Mac, I was kind of complaining that Arxis was just kind of, like, pumping these suckers out, and seemingly not putting a ton of work into them. Mm-hmm. And when I looked up this game and I just took a look at it, I was like, oh, they're not reusing the same sprites that they're using for all these other games, like River City Melee Mach included. They're not like the squat little sprites. Like, oh, they drew some new sprites for this. Cool. This might have something going on to it. So, but the idea is that Kobayashi is visited by this dude who is a time traveler, and you're trying to stop an alien invasion. And the game is supposed to have, like, it's not like a roguelike thing, but it, and it's not really run based, but you're meant to sit there and replay it over and over again. So you got your Kobayashi, who meets up with Kunio. So Kunio is there. And this time traveler dude whose name escapes me, you know, they all meet up, and the game just kind of like unceremoniously drops you into this map and is like, okay, well, you have to fight aliens. You're fighting aliens, and when you defeat 25 aliens of a certain type, the boss alien will show up, and then you beat the boss alien. And once you beat all the boss aliens, then you've basically won the run, and you get power-ups, and then you start over again. So it's an interesting idea. And they drop you into the map, and there is no map to look at. That's bad. They just drop you into the city, and you start, like, you can go in, it's open, it's non-linear. You just start kind of running around the city and looking for enemies to pick a fight with. And some screens, you know, there'll just be like some like UFOs on there, some like weird alien robots. But what you're looking for are these dudes with these like goggles and helmet, because that's your five different types of alien. Or, well, really, it's the same guy. It's the same guy, just colored differently in five different ways.
Palette swaps. So
it's... yeah, it's just a guy. So the object ultimately is to be 125 of this same looking guy, who the only difference between this guy, the different aliens, is like the color. Like they're either like black and orange, or black and green, or black and blue, and black and red, or black and pink, or what have you. So you just run around until a posse of them show up, and then you beat them up, and you go in your subscreen. There's like a little counter that goes up and shows you how many more of them there are. And then after you beat 25 of a particular color, one of the bosses will drop in, and man, they suck. They're hard. And there's like, you know, there's no way to power yourself up. Just like, you don't pick up money. There isn't stores, which are things I might consider a tenant of the River City franchise. Like one of the things that really distinguishes it from other beat 'em ups. You know, the only way you power up your character is by getting to the end of a run. But getting to the end of a run can be a pain in the ass, because you can't power yourself up to fight these bosses. Like, beating the enemies on the street, like, whatever. Who cares? They're easy. But man, like, some of the bosses are just like, good lord. And then they'll beat the crap out of you, and it only takes you back, like, a little ways to, like, to your last save, and then you just get up and you get going again. Just kind of, again, unceremoniously. Save points. The save points are these like little time traveling robot cats, but because they're cats, they're fickle, and they don't show up in the same spot twice, which sounds like a good idea. Like, oh, that's funny, the cats move. But like, when you need to find a fucking save point, God, is it annoying. It's so annoying.
It is.
It's super annoying. So yeah, like the actual combat, you have an attack button, a jump button, a special button, and an item button. Because like as you fight enemies, you'll build up a meter that lets you use items, which are like a health boost or an attack boost or whatever. The special thing also seems to use the meter, but also kind of not. I was like a little vague. Like this, like River City Melee Mach, is also pretty lousy in the localization department. Like, yes, it's in English, and you can kind of, you can understand it, but it's like just not very natural English. You know, it was translated, basically. Yeah. It doesn't feel like it was really like localized. And it does the same thing where just like the typing is sloppy, where letters won't be capitalized at the beginning of sentences, and sometimes there's just like random extra periods. And you're like, well, this doesn't actually affect how the game plays, but it's just cluing me in that like, you didn't really take the time to polish this game up, like, at all. And it bugs me, because I expect and want better out of games in general, but out of River City games especially.
Yeah.
But what it comes down to is just, like, it's, you know, you have, and there is a little bit more to the combat, because if you push in different directions, I figured out, the game doesn't tell you, there isn't a fucking move list, because why would you want that either, if you don't have a map? You know, why do you want a move list, too? If you push in different directions, like different attacks will come out. There's a way that you will like knock an enemy up into the air, and you can chase up after them and do you know, more damage up in the air. But the bottom line is you're just kind of running around this map aimlessly, looking for these dudes who all look alike, who all fight the same way, and all make this funny little noise that sounds like a baby skunk. That's what my wife said. I asked her, I'm like, what do you think these sound like? And she said, a baby skunk. So it's just like this weird little yippy sound, like, it's annoying. And yeah, that's kind of like, that's it. So I like the idea of like, okay, we're going to take this different approach to River City where it's kind of more focused on the combat and you just got to fight your way through and then you power up and you go through a few times and there's different endings. There's different endings. That's kind of like one of the conceits there is you get different endings. And then ultimately, if you go through, once you go through enough times, you get the true ending. But like, why would you want to keep going through? Like, it's not fun. It's just not fun to play through it. Like, it was not fun to play through it, like, even like one cycle, much less many cycles. It's just like somebody had the idea, and this might be like the most harsh I've been. This is probably the most harsh I've been on a game in a while, but I'm just like really frustrated because it's in a franchise that I love. It's like somebody had the idea for a River City game and they made like a prototype proof of concept. Like, well, this is kind of how it's going to go. And then someone was like, cool, put it out. And I was like, well, wait, no, I'm not done. But they're like, cool, just put it out. And it's a real bummer. It makes me real sad.
Damn.
Yeah. It was just like so frustrating. Just like as a fan of the series, I'm just like, I can see, like, even though I didn't recommend River City Melee Mach, I could see what they were going for, like, easily. I'm like, it's not far off from being like at least a tryer, or just like a fuck it, why not? Just to get your hands on the game and like kind of screw around and beat up your friends in it. This, I'm just like, why? Like, you know, after I play, you know, playing it for like a few minutes, I was like already, like my ire was already rising. And I was just like, oh, dude, come on. Like, why are you guys doing this? Like, just throwing these games out. And you can also get in UFOs and ride them on a couple screens, but it's just like a weird, like, one-off thing. Yeah, I don't, whatever. Sure. It's just not very, like, polished or, like fleshed out. I'm just like, what were you, like, it is, they just kind of tossed it out there and there it is. Like, just the enemies don't even look or act differently. Like, what are you doing?
Well, your official verdict for $14.
This is you might be surprised. This is a straight deny it, yo. Please do not.
That is a bummer to hear.
It is a bummer.
Especially because I bought this one.
Sorry,
I didn't know we were getting it for review, so I just bought it the day it came out. It's like, it's River City. It's going to be good, right?
Yeah.
Can't all be winners.
Yeah. Hey, oh, well. Planescape Torment.
Yeah. Planescape Icewind Dale.
Yeah.
All right. To go along with the Baldur's Gate re-releases that came out as well, same day.
Yep. Yeah, so much stuff. So many old RPGs.
Good RPGs to play. Tim, always a pleasure having you on chat.
Thank you, sir.
You will be back later on this week. Until then, do you have any final words?
I have no final words. You'll get all my words on whenever the Thursday that we record episode goes up, Friday or Saturday.
All right, moving on. It is party cast time. Cole, you're here. Pernell, you're here. Chris, you're here. How's everyone doing?
I'm only half dead this week.
Really? You're feeling better?
Yeah, like I'm still a little raspy sounding, and I'm coughing up some goo, which is fun.
Oh,
if you're gonna cough, you gotta cough up the goo.
Yeah.
Basically. But I tried to die last week with the plague. Besides my normal attempts at death, I tried to die from the plague.
So it was like a flu or something?
No, because I've had my flu shot, thank you. I am a good immunocompromised patient and I take my flu shot. But I just got a cold from the kids. They go to school. That's the thing that happens.
The thing that went through my mind just now was, welcome to die.
Yeah, basically. My house during cold season is basically like, it's fine for everybody else, but for me, it has the sign that says, abandon all hope ye who enter here.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like, everybody else is fine. My husband had this same cold for 2 days. I couldn't even swallow my own spit for 3.
You're now on week 7.
Yeah. I will still be coughing up goo 4 months from now.
Sweet.
It never gets better. The
oh, boy.
So that's something to look forward to in the coming episodes.
You know it's going to happen. Like, just gonna. I'm already trying to fight back a cough.
Welcome, folks, to another gooey episode of the SML podcast.
But, I mean, last time, this time last week, I literally sounded like this.
Yeah.
And I couldn't talk any more than that. And that was it. That was all I had.
And that's why it was just the three of us last week without her, and that's why it sucked last week.
Hey. I'll admit, Cole makes it better, but we didn't suck now. Come on.
Oh, we were awful.
We were nuts. See, all this is some
can you imagine how much better last week's show would have been if I'd been here like this the whole time?
Oh, we could have been
yelling at you for everything. Don't
could have made step, fun of you the entire show.
Split. Yeah.
I love a good haunted podcast.
Haunted podcast.
Welcome to another episode.
It was bad. Like, as bad as I sounded for the Thursday show was nothing compared to how I was on Tuesday.
2 days makes all the difference.
I'll sound terrible on Tuesday.
Well, because Tuesday I was hoarse and like I couldn't swallow or anything. Like, I was literally just spitting out my saliva because I couldn't stand to try to swallow it.
But you eventually became a T-Rex and then everything was better, right?
No, I didn't get to be a T-Rex. I still got long, normal people arms and it sucks.
Wait. I've never heard anyone say, I wish my arms were shorter.
Look, do you know how nice it would be to have an excuse for not being able to reach the top shelf?
That's not a good thing.
Wonder how cool
thing.
It would be to have an excuse to not wipe your ass.
Right.
Can't that's reach. Why
you
fuck it.
That's why you wish for retractable arms, not short ones.
Yeah.
But no, because if they're retractable, then like my husband would be like, no, bitch, go get it yourself. But
go,
if they're
go gadget.
They could be like, look how little and sad I am. Please go get me things.
He doesn't have to know your arms are retractable. That's called a marriage secret.
I mean, I sit here and I say that like I don't already play off the fact that I have a stupid disease to do just that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, I sit here on a regular basis and I'm just like, oh, I'd really like a snack. But man, my shoulders hurt. I don't think I could reach up in the cabinet today.
Well, get it yourself. Just push through the pain. Yeah, but my arms are also short. Oh, shit. All right, hold on a minute.
But no. See, like, I love my husband, but he's a sucker.
It's a good thing no one listens to the show, or else word would get back to him.
He wouldn't care. He didn't admit it, too, because he's like, oh, you don't feel good. Okay, I got everything. I'll cook dinner. You sit there. Look, after I broke my leg mopping, I haven't mopped in a year and a half.
I mean, I wouldn't.
He's terrified of me doing literally anything and getting hurt. So he's just like, sit there.
Oh, my God.
Like, oh, no, I guess I got to watch TV again.
And
oh,
I'm like, well, that Need for Speed ain't going to play itself.
Unless you're me, it'd be like Rock Band won't play itself.
Yeah. Call of Duty Slay the Spire isn't going to play itself.
Rock Band is getting to the point where it has to play itself now because it's... I don't know what Xbox did, but they broke the game.
In Xbox's defense, you're literally the only person in the world who has 3,000 items for
Rock Band. No, there's a couple of us, and all of us are really, really pissed off.
The world.
Yeah. There are literally dozens of us.
There are dozens of us.
Literally half a dozen of them.
Like, this is no exaggeration. When you start the game, there's the title screen, and you hit the start button, and it says loading, and then, like, I don't know, 30, 40 seconds later, the main menu pops up, and you get to move on with the game. Not for me. It took me over 20 minutes for the main menu to load up.
Ooh,
I timed it.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was so bad, I decided, you know what, I'm going to try doing a fresh reinstall of the game and see if that works. And because, you know, I have so much shit, it takes forever. It took 4 hours alone for all the items to queue up.
This could be one of the rare times where someone could actually write into a comment to how to wait to neglect your super fans, man, jeez, and actually be true. because usually some guy's like, I bought one of your games, but I play it a lot. I'm your super fan. Like, no, you just bought the game. You want to hear from me. You're like, no, I bought literally every DLC you ever released from the beginning.
I'm missing three.
Oh, no, not three.
Yeah.
Oh,
it sucks because you can't buy them anymore. So I'm literally missing three that I can never buy.
Well, no. Were they promo items or were they tracks that got taken down for licensing?
Licensing.
Oof. Were they at least sucky songs?
One was a Fleetwood Mac song, and then two of them were the Naked Brothers Band from Nickelodeon.
Yeah, you made out better that way.
I should have bought them. I don't know what I was thinking.
Well, I'm okay with Fleetwood Mac at least.
Man, don't beat yourself up over missing the Naked Brothers Band.
It hurts, exactly. Man. The worst part is they were only a dollar a song, so I could have bought them and been like, oh, well, it's only a fucking dollar. Big deal. I'd buy shittier games for more on a regular basis for this show. I could have easily justified $2 on two songs that I would play once and never again just to have them, like all of the other things that I just have to have in Rock Band.
Mm-hmm. Here lies Joe Cam. He really wishes he had the Naked Brothers.
Yeah.
Like, Fleetwood Mac.
No. It's more so about the Naked Brothers. Fleetwood Mac will return on like some kind of like weird promo package.
No, I doubt it.
Was it really like you'll foresee like the potential for like another Fleetwood Mac package coming out and then just bringing back the classic track to go with it?
I doubt it. Who knows? Maybe Hell will freeze over and it'll happen, but I doubt it. They've never brought back any songs that were delisted except for two songs. Soundgarden and Red Hot Chili Peppers were in Rock Band, I think Rock Band 1, and then when it went over to Rock Band 3, they were removed from the game due to licensing, and they brought them back in Rock Band Blitz, a whole new standalone game. But they've never brought back just a DLC song that was removed that I know of.
Yeah, I thought you was about to say they brought back some Bang Camaro trash. Like, yeah, of course it'd be Bang Camaro. God, I hate Bang Camaro.
Why do you hate Bang Camaro?
It just doesn't sound good. Like, I remember like playing their tracks. I'm like, I don't really dislike a lot of tracks in this game. In fact, I think there's little to none. I dislike Bang Camaro. Like, there's not a single song of theirs that I played. I'm like, oh, I want to play that again. It was like, nope, don't bother. And it was that one disc they came out with when Rock Band was either 3 or 4. I think it was 3. But it was a disc that let you get all the old, like, Guitar Hero songs that they had back. And one of them was a Bang Camaro track. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to play that one. that's the one track I'm not even going to bother to download. It could stay out there in the ether. If you're listening to this Bang Camaro, I'm sorry.
Awesome Prime saying they brought back The Hand That Feeds. The thing is, that was something that was on disc and they relicensed to sell by itself since you can't export the discs anymore.
Oh, they stopped doing that too?
Yeah.
That like, sucks for me then.
Yeah, if you never exported the previous games, the only one you could do now is Rock Band 3. 1 and 2 and Lego are gone. You can't get them anymore.
So, like, they're basically down from the store, period. So, like, even if I, like, did the whatever finagle ship you had to do to let the system know that you had these games in your possession, you're still like, nope, can't get them.
Can't get them. Can't export them.
Nuts. Good thing that 360 is still sitting on the floor.
Yeah.
The downside to the world of video game OS, like, rhythm games on systems. Whereas
licensing. Yay.
Just give me a damn popping music machine. And I'll be happy. Just all the tracks are on there. They're not going to take them away from me because it's mine. And that's good. Leave it as is.
I'll just play my copy of Guitar Hero with Jimi Hendrix Spanish Castle Magic with no lyrics.
Exactly. Sometimes that's all we got. And damn it, we like it. We're happy to have sort of that.
Uphill both ways in snow.
Yeah.
Man, do we rock in the snow.
Uphill both ways.
Majesty. Uphill both ways with our guitars. The fandom, the fangirls, oh, they loved it. They loved it as they dropped one by one due to the extreme temperatures. But they loved it.
They did love it. And should we get to some games? We got 4 games to talk about left this episode. Should we just get into this and get over with?
Yeah, especially because I got laundry to get out. I got this dryer running so I can go to bed before 4 a.m.
If we keep these reviews short enough, this episode could be under an hour and a half.
Oh my god.
So if you guys like don't take 20 minutes per game, it's gonna be good.
So, oh man. But I think the companies Cole. Cole.
Rude.
Don't the companies want us to take 20 minutes per game and like talk about all the majesty that we're selling to our fans?
You know the funny part is sometimes I talk 20 minutes about a game that only took me 15 minutes to complete.
I know. Fucking
Even with Rallica, I'm still having trouble figuring out how that's possible.
I'm telling you, there are Rallica games you can complete in 10 to 15 minutes. And yet somehow I find a way to talk about them for 20 to 30.
Yeah, that's the confusing part. Like, I believe the 15-minute completion time is the 20 minutes to talk about it. You must end up repeating certain elements about it or something.
I do. I am very repetitious, and I apologize for that. No, I don't. Fuck off. That's how I roll.
Tell me I'm repetitive.
I'm going to stop apologizing for shit like that. But I
do get to remember my... Show's now over 2 hours.
Yeah, I do get to remember my name. Go. Do reviews.
All right. First game to talk about is called Sparklight, developed by Red Blue Games, published by Merge Games. It released November 14th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $24.99. Sparklight is an action adventure set in a whimsical and ever-changing land. Battle foes in top-down action using an arsenal of gadgets, guns, and gear. Gear up for adventure and explore dangerous corners of the procedurally generated world. Take down titans of the mining industry and harness the power of Sparklight. Also, there is a baller banging soundtrack. Gotta give full disclosure here. Our friend Dale North did the soundtrack for the game. So that's why I'm not reviewing this one. Otherwise, I probably would have been all over it. But Purnell, talk about Sparklight.
So you're saying that because... So I can't be all over it. Is that the challenge I got to work with here? Because I could do that. But
you can be all over it if you want. I'm not sure how close you and Dale are, but I've known him for like 20 years. So
I just want to. I've known him loosely, but not as like a close friend. But nonetheless, I want to be all over it. I want to be all over it. Yes. Do buttery it. Goodness. So Sparklight is actually. So the best way I could think of to describe it before even going into the game proper is I would consider it to be a roguelike light in the ways the gameplay loop is structured. So the idea behind the game is that you play as a girl named Ada, which I just realized, I don't think you did the usual spiel, the descriptive for the game.
I did.
I missed it. I was so wrapped up in being all over Dale North OST, I just dropped it. Idea is, you know how I be, man. So the idea is that you're a girl named Ada who is exploring the world for some reason in a ship, and she crash lands and ends up in this land where, for whatever reason, they experience a form of tectonic shifting that results in the entire planet just shifting. It's a very odd phenomenon that makes me wonder how anyone, including the enemies in the game, can live on this planet. Because as you explore the world and do what you do, every time you pass away, you are brought up to a sky city by way of a crane, and the entire planet does a tectonic shift and changes positioning of everything that's on the planet, which means that, can you imagine just having a barbecue at home? And then one day, you know, just suddenly the earth completely shifts and rotates and everything's just different. I don't even know how to explain it because it makes no sense, but it's great for gameplay. It's great for gameplay because that's where the roguelike comes in. Every time your character dies, the world changes around you. And when you go back down to Earth, you're exploring a new layout. So each area, as you explore it, it plays kind of like a Zelda game in that you're looking for secret dungeons that can carry treasures that you can use to buy upgrades for your character, which I'll get into in a bit. You'll find monster dens that you can actually go into and battle your way through. Think of the monster dens as just individual rooms where you take out a room, move on to the next room. Either hit a switch to open a door or defeat all the enemies in the room to open the door and move on to the next one. And then you get to the very bottom, you'll gain access to some form of treasure, be it like a patch, which I'll explain also shortly, or some money, or pretty much basically some combination of those things. And lastly, another thing you can find are, well, I guess two things. One more thing is dungeon items. Like, so think of like how Zelda has like dungeon items like the, I don't know, like the boomerang or whatever. In this game, you find like ancient relic inventions, like a bomb balloon. And what happens is you find it in the dungeon when you open it up. These are set in the different locations. So this isn't like the randomized stuff. There's always going to be one in each area. You find the item and there's like three or so rooms that allow you to learn how the equipment works. And then after you go through those three rooms, you have to put the item back onto another pedestal and then you lose it. But you gain the schematics that will allow you to build it back at the home hub when you go back. So once you use currency that you acquired in the game world, being called Sparklight, to purchase table space at a workshop, you can then build the gear that you find in these tombs or these dungeons and then use it in your inventory going forward as you explore the world. And that's honestly how you'll end up doing a lot of things as far as combat or destroying rocks to find secret rooms or things of that nature. The patches that I mentioned earlier, that is how you will ultimately upgrade your character aside from the gear that I mentioned before. So there is a rectangular board that's composed of squares, and each patch can take up one or more squares on this board. When you equip them to that board and they fit in, you'll gain advancements on your character, whether it be additional hearts to survive hits, additional energy to use the aforementioned gear that you find that you can invent, or boosts such as higher defense or higher attack power, or increased or decreased time in charging up your weapon, because your weapon has a charge attack that goes from being a swinging wrench to a charging swinging hammer. But there's an upgrade that lets you take less time to do because you wanted to, because while you're charging, you're slow as molasses, which sucks when you're trying to deal with enemies. So this is honestly the gameplay loop. You go to the world map, you explore the area itself, look for wherever the boss of the area is, defeat him, which will then allow you to gain an upgrade, which will allow you to leave and enter the next area of the map. So to give you an early example, when you beat the first boss, your robot companion is rescued and brought along with you, which allows you to excavate a crystal, which when hit will unlock the door to the next region that you need to go to. And that's the loop that will happen for every boss going forward until you reach the end of the game. Now, it's interesting because this is honestly a fun game, but the problem, depending on what you look for when you play roguelites and the such, is that death in this game is, there's almost no real, you don't really fear death in this game, because typically in a typical roguelite, when you die, you lose pretty much dang near everything. There might be some upgrades you can get later, but for the most part, you lose like everything you're holding, which makes it very stressful to die. In Sparklight, when you die, you keep all the money you acquire, which is a very big deal because that's where a lot of your upgrades are going to come from, you harvesting, you know, hoarding money and then spending it at the hub to expand your facilities. But you keep all of your money. None of your gear gets lost. Your one-time use items goes away, but that's not a big deal because it's easy to get more of those back on the main, when you go back to the Earth. And one of the facilities will also allow you to randomly get an item to take down with you. So you'll still start with something too on each run. So whenever I would die, sometimes you'll collect money and say, for example, your board might cost $500 to expand, which means you'll be able to equip more patches to make a better character. You might reach $500 and go, you know what? Screw it. Let someone kill me because I want to go upgrade the board. I don't even care about what I was carrying because none of it matters. And you'll die and you'll go home and you'll upgrade and you'll come back. So is that really a bad thing? No, it's not. Unless you play roguelikes specifically for that challenge. If that's your aim, then you will not be getting that challenge in this game. With that said, though, if you're not concerned about that challenge and you just want to play a game with cool artwork, then you'll definitely get it here because it's a cute game, and the OST even emphasizes the easier pacing of it because the Dale North OST is very relaxing. With the exception of the boss themes, pretty much all the tracks in this game are actually very relaxing and calming. It's a very nice OST and one that I actually haven't been used to lately. Most of the games I play lately have pulse pounding music or something to get you on edge all the time, with the exception of like a Falcon game where like a town might have some relaxing music or something. But for the most part, I'm used to that. But with this, very mellow game. Only downsides I can think of. So yeah, the only downside I can think of flat out is that, though this kind of goes with the roguelike genre in general, is the fact that the tiles, the rooms that you go to, you know, when they randomly generate the area, they use different room templates, basically, and they shuffle them around. I feel like you come across some of those room templates a little bit more commonly or frequently than I would like. Now, that just means that there's less room variety than I would like. But if you're just kind of playing and smashing stuff up, then whatever, you're not going to care so much. But it's just something worth pointing out. Otherwise, I think the game is fantastic. I think it's a great time. I like the fact that even though you do have to go back to the Earth, the planet, multiple times and revisit, there are certain patches that will make it easier to do. Like, you'll find some patches that will reveal, like, all the dungeon areas or all the treasure locations and things like that. So, like, okay, I'm down on the Earth. I know exactly where I want to go. And sometimes, though they take up a lot of space on the board, you'll get the full map of the area that you're going to. It's like, hey, you want to just always see the map? Slap it on the board, and when you land, you can go to, you know, where all the, you know, where the maps lay out, so you can just go right to the next area if you want, or if you want to just explore it, we'll tell you the layout. So it's nice they give you options like that. If you just want to get down and dirty and explore, you can build a board solely to just make exploration easy. But it's a good game. I think it's a nice time. It's oozing with charm, and I've enjoyed it.
Well, then $24.99. What do you say?
I think it is a buy it if you want to give or take a crack at the roguelike genre for the first time and difficulties being your, you know, keep away focus. But if you're more of a two, you know, teeth and nails, you know, roguelike guy, I'd put it as a try it, because that might, I mean, because if the difficulty means that much to you, you're not going to find it here. But otherwise, it's a fun time. So
sounds good.
It
does sound good, and it is good because I've played it and I really like it and I want to play it more, and the music is fantastic and Dale did an awesome job and I'm is proud it? Of him. Yes. Fuck you, Purnell. Next game to talk about is called Perils of Baking, developed by Lilimo Games, published by East Asia Soft, released November 14th on the Switch for $4.99. You play as the younger of two brothers famous for their baking. It's up to you to stop your brother's evil plans as he is given in to a dark artifact. Chris, tell us about the Perils of Baking.
Oh, the Perils of Baking. I love the title of this game. I always like to pay attention to good titles and also good, what do you call it? Like icons, like in your screen. Oh yeah,
the title icons.
Yeah, the title icon is really good on this one. I just love it.
It's what, like, is it?
So your guy here, you know, he's holding a plate in one hand and this ladle in the other hand, but like between his thumb and his finger, so his other fingers are just like spread out and it just looks silly, and there's a flying cookie coming after him.
Nice.
Yeah. I just really like that because, you know, the game is it's a pixelated 2D platformer. So, you know, the portrait of the brother doesn't actually show up in the game. So that's the that's the kind of thing there. Okay, so Perils of Baking opens up with a great story that you should really look at. Because, yeah, it tells you about how two brothers got famous for cooking. That doesn't really give you much more than that. But one of them finds a chef's hat with, like, a rainbow band on it or something like that. He puts it on and then becomes literally five times the size of a normal human. And then any food that he imagines, you know, any recipe that he imagines comes to life and, like, becomes a sentient being. And this is really funny to me because the way they worded it was like all of his recipes. And so it shows him demonstrating this. And, like, you know, he imagines a cookie that comes out and then, you know, it sprouts legs and starts running. That's an enemy in the game. Nice. You know, they're all enemies in the game. There's a donut that sprouts legs and starts running. And then eventually, because it's just showing you the enemies of the game, he imagines a bat on fire that flies away. And I'm like, so if I'm reading this correctly, one of his recipes, a baker, mind you, is a bat on fire. So,
interesting.
Exactly. So I love that. Okay, so this is a game that's a little bit like a hybrid of a Mario type game and Adventure Island. So you play this dude who is a chef and has a beard and a hat. This is important to know Because
you, have a beard and a hat?
That you have a beard and a hat. That's important. And you go on a map and enter a level, and you're, you get the four hearts, Legend of Zelda style, and a hat icon. And basically, you go through the stages and defeat enemies, of course, and you collect food. Every time you collect 50 items of food, whether through defeating enemies or just finding them floating in the air like coins, you refill a heart. If you've lost one, you lose a heart every time you get hit. And when your hearts are full, you get the chef's hat on. And the chef's hat allows you to wield a spatula or something. I think it's like that or one of those like cake triangles. Mm-hmm. Like that you serve slices of cake on. Yeah. You can either swing it as a melee weapon or toss it like an arcing throwing item, and they're infinite use until you lose that chef's hat if you get hit. And if you have all four hearts filled, you can have a spare chef's hat, which is good. Then you can pick up another one and keep going. And if you get hit down to two hearts, you lose your beard, which you and I both know. Exactly. A beard is the source of our power. And there's no explanation behind it. It's just you lose your beard and you have a clean shaven face. And then, of course, two more hits and you're dead. And then you start the stage over. If you can find a popcorn maker halfway through the stage, you can pop yourself a batch of popcorn and you eat it, and that gives you 50 whole points of food, which will refill one of your hearts instantly or get you the spare chef's hat, and then start over from there. The levels are nice and varied. You got your, different scenes and things like that, daytime scene, nighttime scene, and they kind of scroll back through them once you defeat a boss every 10 levels. And, I'm not exactly sure how many levels there are in this game, but given that there's a boss every 10 levels and, each level seems to count as one percentage point to completion, apparently this game's got somewhere around the neighborhood of 100 levels. I don't know. Damn. Or it's just all the bonus content, because you can actually unlock more things. I think it actually may have closer to 40 or 50 levels. Again, I didn't complete the game, so I'm not exactly sure. But, in certain stages, it'll mark it at the beginning, you can access bonus stages that you can achieve just somewhere in the game. It gives you little hints here and there. You've got your regular stages that you run through and throw stuff at enemies, and then you got like minecart stages like Donkey Kong Country.
Nice.
And like I said, the whole thing about why it's like Adventure Island, of course, is because you have the throwing weapon that's infinite use until you get hit sort of thing. And but it's a little more on the Mario side of things. It was actually really cool. And I enjoyed the soundtrack. It's a little unusual, but it's nice and bass heavy and bleepy bloopy. So I quite enjoyed that. But I mostly just love the absurd enemies. They're all dessert based, except for the flaming bat, which just out of nowhere, even like floating platforms or things like wrapped up candies that are put together and for some reason like scrolling. The only thing that I could take away from this game really is the fact that the camera stays on your character and keeps them in the center. So when you jump, the entire camera moves. Yeah, you can become quickly disoriented if you're not used to it. Plus, when you run with the Y button, which is also your throwing weapon button, if you run with that, then that actually he runs really fast versus his fairly slow walking, so it kind of really starts to ratchet you a little bit. But having said, the game never really gets super high on the difficulty, so those are just minor annoyances that you just kind of get used to. Just something for all the 2D platformer inventors out there: if you're gonna force your camera to follow the movement of your character, then make the levels make it to where that works, because if it's just like following you around like that and like you have to move the entire level every time you jump, that's just gonna make the players nauseous.
Yeah.
Having said, though, I really appreciated the amount of content and the quality of this game for the price.
So $5, your verdict?
Yeah, $5. If you're looking for a 2D platformer, this is a good one. I think it's just about right. Like I said, the thing I appreciate the most about it is the personality and the weird ass story. And and by the way, your 20-foot tall brother is like basically the boss in every world. You know, it's not, like I said, the backgrounds and different types of stages tend to repeat sometimes, but I mean, really, they gave you as good as you're going to get for $5, so I say go for it.
I will. That one sounds ridiculous, and the flaming bat, I think, sold me.
I'm having fun with it. Even though the flaming bat is not a fun enemy to fight, it's still, I just love how ridiculous it's that it is in the context that I provided it in.
Yeah, I love ridiculous.
Me too.
Next game to talk about is called Valfaris, developed by Steel Mantis, published by Big Sugar, released November 5th on PS4, November 15th on Xbox One for $24.99. Set in a far corner of space, Valfaris is a heavy metal-infused 2D action platformer and the next game from the team behind Unity Award finalist Slain Back from Hell. Brutal combat, deadly enemies, stunning pixel art, brutal soundtrack, get ready to rip the galaxy a new wormhole. Pernell, tell us about Valfaris.
Well, Ferris is, I actually was describing it to a friend of mine today. I pretty much describe it as Metal Contra, and that's honestly some of the most praise I can give it. Because, well, Contra itself isn't a stranger to metal, but I think it was only really Shattered Soldier that really drove that home. Whereas this game is not only metal in the music, it's also metal in just the atmosphere and just the world as a whole, even the main character. So it's a running gun shooter where you are given three different types of weapons that you have equipped at one time. A melee bladed weapon, a small firearm, and a heavy firearm. So that could be like the light one could be like a pistol or a spread shot, and the heavy could be something like a shotgun or a bazooka or a chain gun or something. So as you go through the areas, you are pretty much tasked at fighting various enemies as they're coming at you on the screen. Now, your firearms consume energy that is pretty much a resource similar to your health bar. And when it runs out, it runs out. However, the way that you can regain ammo for it is by using your melee attack on enemies and objects to acquire energy orbs, which will allow you to use your firearms all over again, or continue to use your firearms. Now, as you proceed through levels, you'll come across a few different things. You'll come across something called a resurrection idol. When you pick these up, of which you can store a maximum amount at a time, these will allow you to post up, I'll say, at various statues that you'll come across as you proceed through stages. And if you set one up, it will allow you to die on the resurrect at that location in the event that you die in the level. In addition to that, it will also allow you to access your loadout. So earlier I mentioned melee, short, light gun, and heavy gun. As you proceed through levels, you will actually be able to locate additional guns and weapons that when you're at these stations, you can swap in and out for whatever one you prefer to use. So you might come across a better bladed weapon and decide you'd rather use that instead of the original one. Now, in addition to that, you can also upgrade the weapons at these stations as well. Throughout the levels, you'll come across something called blood metals, usually hidden in the stages, but every once in a blue moon, there'll also be one in plain sight. And as you acquire them, for every certain amount based on the weapon and how high you upgrade it, you'll be able to further upgrade that weapon. It might increase the power of the weapon. It might add some additional functionality to the weapon. Overall, it's always good to upgrade your gear. Though, you might find yourself wanting to hoard blood metal, because you'll come across this moment where you'll have more guns than you can equip. And you're like, well, what if I upgrade this gun? And I'll regret it because I'd rather upgrade this other gun instead. Well, there you go. That's where the hoarding comes in because you can't decide. So nothing gets upgraded. Damn, that's a hard mode. So as you play through the levels, you're acquiring blood items or blood orbs or blood metal, rather. You're acquiring resurrection idols. And for the record, to cover it, if you acquire a resurrection idol while you've maxed out your total cap, you'll get HP and energy boost. So there's nothing wrong with hoarding resurrection items if you think you're that much of a badass. So At the end of a level, you'll come across a boss. The bosses are generally pretty cool and creative. That I won't go so far to say they tax your metal to the extreme, but they will make you stay on your toes, not just like stand in place and just fire shots. If you just putz around, you're going to die. In fact, that can be said for pretty much this entire game from the very beginning onward. If you screw around, you're going to die. You're going to die a lot. But the bosses are exceptionally good for that. I enjoy fighting them. And when you beat them, there is a station that usually shows up at the end of a level where you can cash out the resurrection items that you did not spend on the stage to get additional blood metal. I honestly like that concept a lot, because what this means is that it rewards people who are ridiculously good at these games, or people who are just that patient. Because technically, you could get 3/4 through a stage, never use a resurrection idol, die, respawn at the very beginning of the stage, and keep doing that until you get a perfect run. There's no reason you can't do that. And if anything, it's a choice of whether you value your time or the gear that you get for not, using your resurrection idols. And then by doing that, you'll be able to just stock up on blood medals and upgrade your weapons faster. So it's kind of a reward for that style of gameplay if that's what you choose to do. The music is exceptional. There's no other way to describe it. Though I will flat out say, if you're not a fan of metal, screw that. This isn't even a game for you to begin with.
Yeah, if you're not a fan of metal, why are you looking at this game to begin with?
Exactly. There's no point. But if you are a fan of metal, in which case, kudos, friend, fellow taste. This game is right up your alley on the music department, because they kick ass with it. It goes great with the atmosphere and the environment you're running through, and it just makes an overall fantastic package. I will say one thing that takes getting used to, though, is that the melee weapon isn't instantaneous swing. At least it didn't feel like it to me. It took getting used to the timing of it to press the button to landing the blow. So don't expect to be like twitch. And honestly, it wouldn't be surprised if it's kind of deliberate too. Like, they don't want you just to run through an entire stage where the game was built around gunplay and just, like, slash everything. It's like, yeah. No, you have to plan out these swings, and you're only really using them to either conserve ammo or to get ammo back. You're not really going to be just like, I'm going to play the whole level with my sword, and only my sword, unless, of course, you're that guy who's going for the, for just badass points or something, which, in case, more kudos to you. I ain't that guy, though. So, honestly, overall, I think this game is a quality good time. I did hear at one point that Slain didn't get a whole lot of love. And if you were not looking at this because of some issues you had with Slain, I would honestly say to maybe reconsider that and give this game a try on its own merits, because they're kind of two different styles of game as a whole, I think. And in addition to that, from what I've been reading, because again, I never got to play Slain, they've made improvements, like, compared to like how that one felt and how this one feels. So honestly, I think it still would be worth giving it a try, if not just to let that game dissuade you from trying this one out.
Well, then $25. What is your official verdict?
I think it's a solid buy. Between this and Blazing Chrome, I don't feel so bad about Rogue Corp sucking a crapper.
I enjoyed Rogue Corp. It wasn't great, but it was enjoyable.
Would you say it was Contra?
No, you got me there.
Yeah. See, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to go so far as to say the game is just utter trash. Like, kind of just did. But it's more like when I buy a game with the Contra name on it, I want Contra. So, like, they mentioned the ammo issue. I think that's an interesting mechanic of a game to make you kind of, like, juggle guns. But I don't want that when I play Contra.
You just want to shoot everything.
Exactly. So that's why I was like, why didn't they just call it something else? Like, I don't know, just Rogue Corp, and just drop the Contra entirely. Could have been interesting.
I thought that's what they were doing at first when the trailer was first announced. I thought it was just Rogue Corp.
Now, honestly,
it came out Contra Rogue Corp, and it suffered because of that, I guess.
I mean, I think so, because, I mean, I'm going off tangent, but that's what I do. But
yeah, you're the tangent master. We're so close to the end, and you want to go on a fucking tangent.
Yes, but this is a good tangent. But, like, if you go back and, like, listen to a number of reviews that people did on Contra Rogue Corp, you'll notice that most of them were referencing it as a Contra game. Like, they were very specific about it, which makes me believe that if it weren't a Contra game, they would have probably fared better in the grand scheme of things with people.
Probably. Anyway, the last game is not a Contra game. It is called Biolab Wars, developed by Colibri Game Studio, published by Forever Entertainment, released November 15th on the Switch for $1.99. Inspired by the 8-bit games and by the movies of the 80s, your goal is to blow things up, defeat aliens, and fight bizarre bosses in this platformer 2D with classic mechanics. Chris, tell us about Biolab Wars.
I got bad news for you, Joe.
What?
It is a Contra.
It is Contra? Well, son of a bitch.
It is. It actually is. No, it's a it is an 8-bit run and gun.
And but it's not called Contra.
No, so. It's not called Contra. Yeah, it's called Biolab Wars.
Contra, Biolab Wars by Konami and Forever Contra Entertainment.
Spirit.
I was actually worried that it was like when I saw just the title when you asked if I was interested in this one, I hadn't heard of the game, so I naturally assumed by Biolab Wars that it was like some kind of like a sim, like a simulated like war strategy game between like two plasma donation centers. But and I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna have much fun with that. And then I looked at the screenshots and I was like, oh hell yes. I will take this. Biolab Wars. Yes. So this is another 8-bit throwback game. It features, like I said, the running and the gunning. And this is one of the games. Okay. So this one, as well as the last one, is just packed with personality. And I love it. Like, as soon as the intro comes up, you're just like, yes. It's like, and it, you know, you go to the character selection screen and you're just like, yes. And I even recommend actually doing the how to play, because even though this is an extremely simple, like, to learn game, because it follows a lot of the Contra rules, it's like it's actually funny. And it's like really I just really love it. I did the how to play twice just because I thought it was amusing. So yeah, you select your characters. You either have a dude or a lady or a dog in a robot suit. And so that's, of course,
your dog in a robot suit.
Yes, his name is Teddy.
You're selected.
Yeah, exactly. His name is Teddy, and he is the goodest boy.
Aww.
Yes, and he even has lines of dialogue in the tutorial, and I just love it. He's just like, you know what? He's like, you got to defeat those worms. I hate worms, but you know what? I love cookies. Can I have a cookie? So, and yeah, like, they all three control exactly the same. So really, it's just down to like which one do you want?
The dog.
And the right answer is Teddy. Yes.
Yeah.
So you get into this game, and the backgrounds are great. The levels are varied. Level 2 is an auto scroller. And they talked about the bizarre bosses, but man, so as with a game of this ilk, it, you know, turns out that aliens are behind everything, and so you have to defeat some aliens, but sometimes you just have to defeat, like, you know, more terrestrial bosses. The second boss I'm going to call out as shout out as my favorite, it is Trucker Baby. 'Cause while you're, like, rolling on your motorcycle or scooter if you're Teddy, and you know, shooting all the bad guys and stuff, this truck appears out of nowhere, and behind the wheel is just a giant muscular baby with a pacifier, and he's Trucker Baby.
Okay,
well, you're doing a very good job of selling this game.
I know.
I'm already sold.
I know. And yeah, like, basically, you know, it's all these bizarre situations. And yeah, you have 4 different weapons, I think, that you can equip. They're all just higher powered than your regular pew pew gun. You know, you got a spread shot, a laser shot, and you also get grenades that you can throw, and they're pretty good, high damage, especially good for bosses. Because I exclusively use them on bosses, because all the bosses are weak to grenades. And yeah, like, basically, you know, you just run through the levels and win the day. And like I said, each one just has, like, you know, great pixel art, great soundtracks. I was, like, really surprised at every turn. Now, the only complaints, I do have a couple. One, my main thing is that controls are not changeable, and they have the jump button mapped to B and the shoot button mapped to A, which is against it. That's against every rule. At least let us switch those, folks. Please patch this. I feel drunk with power because Onikin and Odalis had the patch go through that let you change the controls after I complained loudly about it. So,
oh, nice. But,
well, it wasn't because of me. It's just,
oh, no, it was because of you. Just you.
Okay. I'll take the credit. But it was something I complained about, and they did fix it. So, saying, Calibri, you have a potential hit on your hands here. I know it's only a $2 game, but, you know, if you fix that, I'm going to call this a must-buy.
Look at it this way.
Shooting ahead a little.
Like, you got cats trying to sell $20 games on the Switch for 99 cents. Their game is already pretty much there. So, mm-hmm. No harm in that.
I know, right? Actually, I think this game was 99 cents for its initial run. But, and I wanted to mention one more thing about just selling you on the bizarre things. You actually can get some little partner-like things, like power-ups, essentially, that, you know, kind of double your shot, one at an angle and one straightforward. The one at an angle is a cat with a helicopter backpack, and the one that does the straightforward shot is a flying chicken.
Yeah,
and
beautiful.
They have their own health bars, so you're going to spend more of your time like trying to protect them than actually, you know, you're like, you could take me, but don't take my chicken.
Best bird.
But yeah, like all this stuff. The only other thing I guess I could say, and this is not a complaint because of the price specifically, but it's a little on the easy side and short side. This is a game that you'll probably have done in a day, but you're going to want to play it again as soon as you're done.
For more chicken fun.
Yeah. Yes,
for more chicken fun. So I guess the only question is, $1.99, how worth it is it?
This is one of those gems in that, you know, glut of, you know, $1 to $2 games that we see all the time and that keep showing up on the, you know, the greatest hits, or not the greatest hits, but the bestseller list, you know?
Yeah.
Which I always buy them when they're, you know, like the one penny game and the four penny games and like things like that. I'm like, I'm a sucker. I'm going to get it. But no, this one is actually, I think, worth your time, which is, you know, arguably more valuable than $1.
True.
Or $2. But yeah, no, I think they did a great job on this one, and I really am looking forward to seeing more from this developer.
And hopefully a patch that lets you change the controls.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, even though I think it looks and sounds great, the controls could probably use a little tightening up. Like, there's so many things that are just little things, and none of it takes away from the game because the game's not especially hard.
Yeah.
To me, it's just the controls. That's the only thing I would say. Please, let's have this going. And by the way, a note, because I've been making this note in my reviews lately, neither of the games I covered this week are playable with the NES controllers.
Oh.
Because they got too much riding on the Y and X buttons. So, yeah. Well, this one you could play, but you can't throw grenades, and you're going to want to throw grenades. So,
yeah.
But I mean, I'm willing to be.
It's cool that you're testing that out and giving us info on if they work or not. That's cool.
Yeah. I'm trying to, because I think that the NES controllers are a great addition, and these kind of games always feel really good when you are able to play them with like classic, you know, controller
chunk
things.
Of rectangular plastic in your hands.
Yeah, but you know, another tip I guess to folks out there making these 2D platformers, remap the Y button to R or L, just for folks who like to play with the different, or like I said, make the controls different, like, or make them customizable. Yeah, it can't be that hard.
It's just a switch, I'm sure.
There were a massive email now. I was like, let me explain to you how difficult this actually is, sir.
Oh, listen, man. Here, you entitled son of a bitch. I'm going to explain this to you, and I'm going to explain it just once.
But having said, this is probably one of the better ways to spend $2 on the Switch, for sure.
Also, I've been read this song. Like, you mentioned the name of that monster, like Trucker Baby. I'm just like, Trucker Baby, just hurry down the highway tonight. That's all I've been thinking about this entire review since you said this. Like, crap!
I didn't mean for it, but yeah, Baby Trucker is VIP. Well, baby, no, I guess Trucker. Teddy's VIP, but Baby Trucker is most improved. I don't know.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks, Tim, for coming by and doing his reviews. Thanks to all of you for being here doing your thing. Thank God it's a short one.
Well, I can finish my laundry and fold it before going to bed.
Nice. The laundry fairy is set.
Right.
That's right. Until all Cole takes over.
I'm not taking over. You're going to come over here and do my laundry. See, my arms are too short, and I'm sick.
I got these itty-bitty T-Rex arms. I can't reach.
I need help.
Oh, my God. Cole, do you have any final words to end the show?
No, I already said I need help.
Someone help that woman.